What is the point? That sounds so familiar.
I've never heard that before.
Hello and welcome to the Soccer Central podcast. I'm James Sharman. Brendan Dunlop's here. Thomas Dobby's here. We're laughing because we spent the last hour recording a great podcast, an amazing podcast, only to discover that it wasn't recording properly. Like the old days, boys.
Never won an hour at the old place, though. Never won an hour at the old place.
Oh, my God.
I'm still really happy with my performance. It's okay.
Let me tell you, it was magnificent.
I'm sure it was pretty good.
So we'll do a condensed version here because we're all gasping for beers. Very professional. The World Cup, boys. We're after the group phase. We're approaching the round of 16. It's been a pretty decent World Cup so far, hasn't it? It's been a great World Cup so far. Yes, there's been a slight slur with Luis Suarez biting Giorgia Chiellini, but overall, it's been just outstanding. Why has it been so good?
Well, it came to an end today. I mean, with Portugal losing and, you know, England's out. What a depressing half an hour of radio we put together for the viewers.
Listeners,
it was good.
Be listeners,
I
by the way.
Last time, has, you know, Suarez overshadowed the World Cup, and will this be the lasting image? And you know, let's hope.
I was getting to that in my next question.
Okay,
that's
so
fine.
Why has it been so good? The ball. I will say the bazooka. Astronaut Chris Hadfield went through the science of why the bazooka is better than the Jabulani. You can find it on the Steve's website. Fantastic.
Okay, it's not because of the ball.
Okay.
No. It's not.
How about dynamic offenses? More dynamic attacks. Poorer defenses.
Yeah, well, that's my point, all right, is that, you know, there's probably numerous reasons for it. We saw, for example, Barcelona. Why are we all laughing now?
Because
it sounds
actually,
so familiar.
Because I'm wondering if we should check the recording. It's actually what I'm thinking.
No. Listen, all seriousness here, you know, we've seen Barcelona over recent years show you can win by playing positive attack in soccer. Spain reinvented international football. Plus, the attack and the foreplay in this World Cup is unparalleled, and there's, I don't think, any great defenses. In previous World Cups, European Championships, there's been one or two or three great teams who base themselves around a great defense. Name more than one truly world-class, legendary centre-half in this World Cup. I think Thiago Silva for Brazil might be that one guy. Apart from him, there's some very good ones, but there's no one that just stands out as being a dominating presence, really.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I mean, you've got quite a handful of great center backs, and but you look at even the pairing of Sergio Ramos and Gerard Piqué was absolutely disastrous. I thought that would be the case because they hate each other as human beings. But as far as I think the whole tournament goes, and you look at all 32 teams, there's really not the you know amount of rocks on the back line that we're used to seeing.
Sure, and the three teams that I think left that we can really point to that have the best chance to win, and I'd be surprised if it's anyone outside of Brazil, Argentina, and Germany. Their back lines isn't the focus. I mean, these teams do enough defensively, but it's their attacking prowess of why we think they can win the tournament. And, you know, when the best teams are like that, everyone else playing catch up. It's not Italy 2006, and it's not, you know, these old time classic defensive teams. Argentina, Brazil, and Germany are all going to concede quite a few goals in the run-in here and in the knockout stages, but any of the three could win simply because of, you know, the attacking flair and the attacking threat. There's going to be some 3-2 games, and I think that's great for the neutral, and it's, you know, it's great for the game in general.
I think it's all secular too. I mean, I think this will change. Just right now we're enjoying this offensive era in football. We've seen it before in previous eras, you know, the total football of the 70s, for example. Things come around, right? But right now, let's enjoy it because honestly, call me, you know, a Neanderthal, but I would much rather see lots of goals than no goals. You know, I would much rather see high-octane offense and defensive mistakes and miscues than the other.
In your career, I'm sure you've been called a lot of names, but Neanderthal is probably on the low end.
Oh, you'd be surprised.
Really?
I've been called quite a lot this World Cup, actually. yeah, surprisingly enough.
The counterattacking as well has been, you know, amazing to see, and the amount of goals on the counter. So it's, you know, teams are soaking up pressure, inviting pressure, and it leads to good chances and also leads to, you know, quick breakaways the other way. I think the stories of the World Cup, obviously outside of Suarez and storylines, but you know, in terms of things that we keep on seeing, is counterattacking goals, goals by substitutes, and goals off headers.
yeah, we are.
All that leads up to a lot of goals.
Goals.
I'm not sure what the group stage record was, but it must have been close.
Well, up until was it Tuesday? This World Cup was being known for goals around the world. Man, what a great World Cup! And then something happened.
I think just the third
Luis
round.
Luis Suarez.
Right.
And suddenly it became known as the Luis Suarez Bite World Cup. Do you think it will be remembered as that? I mean, listen, we can talk about it as a soccer purist and we can appreciate the games, and we do. I think a lot of our listeners will appreciate the World Cup for what it is on the field. But the mainstream audience are into this World Cup now for one reason and one reason only, and that's because Luis Suarez is hitting the mainstream. He's hit, you know, Jimmy Kimmel, for God's sakes.
Yeah, he's hit Jimmy Kimmel, but I think, you know, Jimmy Fallon was talking about the U.S. men's national team after that win against Ghana and making jokes about the haircuts in the roster and whatnot. I think that the quality of football has pulled in a lot more people, and it will hook a lot more people, that when this tournament is over 2 weeks from now, we'll, you know, gather around at Christmas time and talk about how entertaining it was. And I mean, these 2 weeks we've watched so far are the most entertaining 2 weeks of football I've ever watched. Think of any club period. I can't think of 2 weeks that have been as stellar front to back as this.
Me too.
I think that'll be the last thing.
I agree. And, you know, listen, there's been some great European championships over the years. Who generally there's more attack than World Cups. The first one I remember watching quite closely was, I guess, 86, but I was still very, very young. Mm-hmm. I remember England's running that World Cup more than anything else, and that was considered a great World Cup. 90 was awful, but I remember it because of England's decent run and Gaz's tears, of course. So I think out of all the ones I've watched, you're right, this is the best two-week stretch. It slowed down a bit this week, as it would do, as the games became very important, but overall, it's been a great group phase, sullied somewhat by Luis Suarez. But you know what? I like a bit of nastiness in a World Cup. It needs something. It's been too nice up until this point.
You think
good
so?
Old Luis. By the way, quickly, do you think the punishment, essentially 22 games, was appropriate? Was it harsh? Was it soft?
I think it's about right. If anything, it might have been a bit soft, because of, you know, the repeat offender. This is the third time we've seen it. When it's on such a stage, like you said, it's in the mainstream, they had to, you know, make it harsh enough. You're better to go, you know,
too harsh and too soft.
Too harsh and too soft. Yeah. So I think they just got it right in a sense, because you have so many eyes on you. And, you know, I could compare it to Zidane in the 06 final. It's obviously different in the sense where it wasn't, you know, biting someone, but it's as violent an act in a lot of ways.
Oh, sure.
The fact that Zidane was in the final and the legendary status and how it kind of ended, I think that the lasting image of that World Cup will be that. I really hope Suarez won't be, and I have a feeling that it won't be in the end, because we have so much to go here, and, you know, with the Messi and Neymar storylines, and just...
I think it will.
I hope that the soccer will outweigh...
Me too.
Luis Suarez.
I think amongst the football community, you know, the soccer can transcend that. I think in the sporting culture, it won't, because I still get people talking about Zidane, people who aren't soccer fans, just you know, sports fans. Oh, yeah, remember that guy, headbutted that guy in that World Cup match? Mm. They don't say, wow, Fabio Cannavaro was amazing in that World Cup.
But you'll always have those people. But
that's
that
most
there's,
people.
I think that there's a lot of people, regardless of, you know, we talked about the first World Cups we remember as kids. There's a lot of people older than... Exactly. Yeah,
the
2010 World Cup was my first. There'll be a lot of people that remember this as their, you know, first World Cup, because it was great, and hopefully are hooked to the sport and have many more World Cups to watch. I really think that the sport has done itself a lot more good than bad this 2 weeks.
Of course, it could all go wrong, right? We're past the group phase. There's two World Cups within a World Cup, right? The knockout rounds and the group phase. So
also
far,
haven't heard,
so good.
Also haven't heard one story about a protest since Brazil kicked
it's
off that
very
first
quiet,
game.
Hasn't it, eh? Very quiet, yeah. You wonder whether they've been extinguished by the government and the police, or whether they're just not as serious as people first thought. But let's focus on the football. You know, you look at the big stories outside Suarez, and Spain going out and the way they went out has to be the biggest story, doesn't it?
It has to be. I mean... The fact that I said when we did this last time, stick to it. People at home don't care. You know, what it does, it just makes you appreciate how difficult it was for them to win three tournaments in a row. I mean, that it's tough to win a second tournament in a row because everyone's gunning for you. Everyone tries to figure out your style. For Spain to have won in 08, 2010, and 2012, they were never going to win this tournament.
No.
They were never going to. And I know some people still pick them, but that was probably because, like, well, it's Spain. So many things have to go right for you to win a tournament. You need to be the best team and get luck. And, you know, things fall into place for you. And it just... But the fact of how they went out, you know, Dunlop, you and I watched that game against the Netherlands together, and how it changed that quickly. And Spain just...
It was surreal to watch.
On the second day of the tournament, getting, you know, this... team that gave up one goal in all of Euro last time and give up five in one game.
Yeah. Oh, you scored seven.
It was insane. It really was crazy to watch. And it's just, you know, it sparked what was a great 2 weeks, and you hope that it continues into the knockout stages. For me, you know, it's fun in a way to see the big teams go out like that because it just creates drama. I know, you know, we saw France and South Africa and all that crap, but with Spain and Italy and England and Portugal all going out.
Oh, God.
I don't really want to see it happen in the knockout stage because I don't want to see a Greece, you know.
Why is it always a Greece?
A Greece semifinal.
Greece get ripped off.
Well, yeah, well, they deserve it because they play the ugliest form of football ever and have more luck than... seeing how the fortunes turn their way against Côte d'Ivoire, I could not believe it happened again to Greece. No business being in the last 16.
Well,
no,
sure they did. They got the points to get there.
Whatever.
And by the way, it was a penalty. Back to Spain, though. it also showed me what a game of inches it is and seconds and moments because... Because, you know, prior to the RVP goal, that could have been a Spain rout. I thought they were fantastic in the first 45 minutes or first 44 minutes. David Silva missed a couple of great opportunities. And then, of course, that the RVP goal, which for me is the goal of the tournament so far. There's been some great goals. I mean, Kale's volley was pretty sweet as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was amazing. And then, of course, in the second half, they fell apart. And that was probably the moment that, you know, Spain's legendary team fell apart because mm-hmm. it was that RVP goal.
They were never going to recover.
And when Xabi Alonso says post-match, you know, we haven't got the hunger we once did. Like, that's just scathing to me. But you understand that why Alex Ferguson said every team's got a four-year cycle. Mm-hmm. This team went to six and then crashed out in flames. But I hope we don't remember Spain for crashing out in flames. We remember them for being probably the best international side I've ever seen.
I think they'll be remembered and appreciated as that. I think that they got a lot of people into the sport. They got a lot of people into thinking about formations and tactics and appreciating different styles. I think they'll long be remembered for that. But for the football purists, as you like to call us, I think that the collapse was certainly appreciated by a few people. But to go back to Dobby's point, you know, the hardest thing to do in football, the only thing harder than winning a tournament is winning it again. I thought there was no chance that Spain would pull it off again and win four tournaments in a row on those odds alone. And, you know, to see them burn in flames as they did, as I say, it's entertaining and appreciated by some, but not by all.
Who's impressed you the most out of Netherlands and Chile?
The Dutch.
I mean, I think the way that they took Chile in the third game and how vital that was to win it.
Yeah.
When you look at the setup of the bracket, it changed the complexion of the tournaments completely. If the Netherlands lose that game, they've got Brazil in the round of 16 and
awful situation.
They beat them last time out in the last World Cup, but that's the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Now instead, the Netherlands get Mexico and then Costa Rica or Greece in the quarters if they can get past that.
Punch them through the semis already.
I'm punching Netherlands into the semifinals, whereas Chile, as good as they were in the first two games and fun to watch, have a massive task against Brazil, a team that always beats them and a team that they know and are comfortable with and, you know, just worst case scenario. So I think that Chile-Netherlands game, you know, as much as, oh, they're both through and the first 70 minutes were so poor, that was a massive game. That was a huge statement game and one that both of them needed. So I think for the Dutch to pass that test with flying colors
right.
against the, you know, after the first game and then against Australia, they bobbled and gave up a couple goals. They thought, oh, is this team really for real or was it just kind of a one-off? To do what they did against Chile and keep a clean sheet, you know, now they have nothing but hopes to go on and go all the way.
That was the game for me that really showed what Chile are made of. And for me, you know, just not there yet to be another South American power. It reminded me of 4 years ago when Portugal played Brazil in the final group game to avoid playing Spain. The loser had to play Spain, and Portugal didn't go for it. And Chile, to me, it seemed like I never really thought they were in that game. I never saw them as a threat to win it. Prior to, I did, but in the match itself, it wasn't. And now they've set themselves up with Brazil, and it could be close. I think it might be a one-goal difference, but Brazil all the way.
Well, Brazil, I mean, they've owned Chile in the last decade, right? Never lost 10 wins. Two draws, utter domination. But I just like this Chile team. They do things their own way. They don't care about how they're supposed to play football. They've got bloody Cardiff midfielder playing centre-back, for God's sakes, you know. Nottingham Forest reject
yeah.
in the back three as well. Back three football, by the way. I mean, I am no formation geek, you know that. But I tell you, I'm enjoying watching these wouldn't say unique, but you know, less used formations at this level is fun. Brazil, obviously under the most pressure. Neymar is being absolutely brilliant.
He likes the spotlight.
Oh boy!
Oh my God! This
thriving.
Guy, he's thriving. Absolutely, he just loves it. He's such swagger. Now, if he gets hurt, God forbid, I don't know what they'll do. You wonder if Hulk. I mean, what Hulk? 2 years ago, was seen as this guy is going to one of the best centre forwards in world football.
Well, 40 mil, wasn't it?
And it's since then, right? Isn't it? He just hasn't been the same player.
But for Brazil, he's never been able to replicate that Porto form that we remember as being dominant. I think that, you know, having to share the ball and share the spotlight with Neymar, he's getting far fewer chances, and his finishing isn't at the same level. So I'm disappointed that I spent $18 million on him in our fantasy live auction. But apart from that, Hulk is what I expected him to be.
By the way, Fred.
Fred J.
Dwayne, yeah, Fred J. Dwayne De Rosario on steroids.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah, huge.
Yeah,
huge.
Brazil, I mean, they're so reliant on Neymar, but the midfield is, you know, all world with Gustavo and with Oscar. I think, is going to have...
Well, Paulinho. You know, what about Paulinho starting? Talk about a guy that puts on a yellow jersey and suddenly plays better.
What they need him to do, and Oscar, I think, is going to just bust out in the next
The first game phase. Was probably the best playmaking midfield performance I've seen in the World Cup so far. Yeah, he was good. Very, very good. Mm. Speaking of midfielders, stroke forwards, Colombia and James Rodriguez. We knew this guy was decent. You know, we watched him in the Champions League. Got the big move to Monaco. Wasn't cheap, so obviously he's hardly a no-name. But I think he is a no-name to the average footballing fan. Yep. And he's been, along with Messi, Neymar, you know, maybe the best player at this World Cup.
As important to his team as we all presumed that Falcao would be, and as important, I'd say, as Ronaldo is to Portugal. James has been great.
It's his work ethic that has really surprised me, having not watched a lot of him this past year. His work ethic, I mean, man, he's been in on, I think, all but one of their goals, like winning corners, you know, or just tracking
my
back.
My favorite James since James Harman over there.
Harman.
No, with Colombia, I mean...
I don't track back.
I always thought that the attacking flair would be there, and, you know, the loss of Falcao, they've overcome it quickly. I think the most impressive thing is that defensively they've looked really solid. I mean, they bobbled for the last half hour against Ivory Coast. Gervinho scored a really nice goal, and they were a little bit, you know, on edge there. But they've also had the luck of playing against Greece and Japan, so against Uruguay it's going to be a different animal. We'll see. I think Colombia should be and are favorites, and I expect them to go through in that game. They're another one of those South American teams where, you know, we thought the South American teams would do well. Brazil and Argentina, of course, the two favorites. But Chile, Colombia, Uruguay all did what we thought they'd do, getting through, you know, groups. Chile, a really tough one. And, you know, now is their time, because I think that these nations, the pressure is on these teams in South America. The pressure is on Chile, the microscope that they're under. Their training got postponed today, or got cut off in the middle because of, you know, a news chopper or the fans breaking into the Americana. I mean, these teams are under massive pressure.
Huge pressure.
America. It's not just, oh, okay, nice, you got through. They're expected to go far, and this is, you know, their country's feeling their reputation on the line. So it'll be interesting to see how these players can deal with that pressure now that it gets to knockout stage.
Speaking of dealing with pressure, Group D, which I know, obviously Group G and Group D ended up both being the group of death. Simple as that, right? No one saw Costa Rica emerging.
No one.
Outside of Spain, outside Spain, you know, that is the big story. Because no one even discussed Costa Rica. I did my research and I, you know, went through my little poor man's black book here. And, you know, Costa Rica's got very little writing on it because I just dismissed them. You know, I think in a preview, numerous preview shows I did, I probably combined spent 17.3 seconds discussing Costa Rica. But they've been full value. They haven't snuck into this. They've gone at every single team and said, listen, we'll give you the ball, but boy, you watch out when we counter. And they've been just fun to watch.
17.3 seconds just to explain that it's Joel Campbell, not a contrived Joel or anything
Joel
like
Campbell,
that.
Campbell,
I agree with you. They've been very fun to watch, and they've no fear, absolutely going for it. Great belief and determination, and I fully rate them against Greece and hope they smash the hell out of the Greeks.
So
we get over that, man.
Jeez. Sorry, I'm bitter about which
2004.
You know that.
Yeah.
Watch what you say.
And I did call Greece to get out this group, by the way.
Yeah.
Nice.
Just so you know, free drinks.
I guess Lady Luck hangs around with you, but she doesn't go. No, she doesn't go far from the
rest.
Part,
the rest
right?
of my brackets will prove that there is no Lady Luck here, pal.
Oh boy.
Believe me.
You kind of like the Portuguese.
And I mean, Costa Rica or Greece going to be in the World
quarterfinals? Insane.
Nobody saw that coming. Costa Rica were expected to get 0 points. You know, expected to absolutely get run over. Even when they beat Uruguay, I don't think people thought, oh, they can go through with it. Wow, Uruguay are a spent force. You know, they're terrible, and Italy and England will go through, and that's that. Costa Rica not only get through, but win that group and win it quite comfortably, beating Italy. Italy could muster nothing against them. They're so well organized.
I thought that was Costa Rica, a testament to them. They played the best game. They had a team game. They had an approach that they didn't falter from. And I didn't think Italy were awful. They just couldn't get past them.
Well, I was blindsided by the Spain performance. I think the most disappointing performance might be Italy, because I had them being so much better than they showed. I thought they were great in that first game against England. I thought, you know, England actually played really well in that game and asked some questions, but they were so composed, had that ridiculous passing percentage, I think 93% as a team. Pirlo was just pulling those strings. And that right hand side, Darmian and Kondrava, who'd have known, but they were just dominant. And I thought, wow, watch out for this team, man. Italy have actually started the tournament really well. And then something happened, be it Costa Rica or be it Uruguay, something happened and they just fell apart.
They did the complete opposite of what you're supposed to do. Yeah. They played the first game was their best game, and it was a complete decline from there.
And that's why we love this tournament, and that's why we love this sport, and that's why we love sport in general. It's the unpredictability.
I mean, oh, yeah.
Italy built back from that demoralizing, devastating 4-0 loss in the final to Spain. Built it perfectly, pretty much as well as you could script it for 2 years. You know, Prandelli had all the right pieces going. They were a team. They came into this, and a lot of people picked them as a dark horse, could go to the final, could win this
thing. I had them in the semis.
In the blink of an eye, they're gone. And that is, you know, the best stage and the biggest stage, and that's what it does. And some players just don't have some teams just don't have the fortitude to get through it. And that was the case with Italy this time. I'm not sure what happened. I don't think Prandelli knows what happened, and that's why he's out of there. And, you know, the side story of having to pull off your best goal-scoring attacker 45 minutes left in a game where you might need a goal because you're worried he'll get sent off.
It's just, poor old Ballo. Poor old Ballo's reputation, again, gets just dinged, and so it should. I mean, he just once again let his team down, and he shouldn't be the scapegoat. He shouldn't be the scapegoat. There's numerous scapegoats there, but disappointing from Ballo once again. I just feel bad for the next manager, whoever it is, who has to explain to the public why he's dropped Andrea Pirlo, who's still world-class, and he's dropped Gigi Buffon, who's still world-class, because I think to move forward, you have to move on from these players, because they won't be around in 2 years' time.
No, they won't be.
When they had to be, you know, at their best in year 2016. Frankly, they should both retire.
Yeah, I thought Pirlo had a pretty poor tournament, to be honest. I know you say he's still world-class. The game against England, he had some moments, but games against Costa Rica and Uruguay, I thought he really went downhill. And
looked his age.
That last of that old guard in that team. I mean, he was the last beacon, shining light, in a very different way. It reminds me of Gerard with England, because you're trying to bring in the kids in this mix, and then you've got that one guy that's been there forever.
Well, you know, I just think this World Cup, we could be saying goodbye internationally to Xavi, to Pirlo, to Steven Gerrard. Now, I'm not putting Gerrard in the same company as Pirlo and Xavi internationally, obviously, but listen, Gerrard's a legend. We're saying goodbye to some very good players. England, first game, impressed. Thought they played really well. Second game, disappointed, because for some reason they didn't play the same way, and they're far more pedestrian compared to using that pace in the counter in the first game. In the third game, who cares about that? You know, I don't know what Hodgson was doing there, playing Frank Lampard. Basically, then thanks, Frank, for coming over here. Please, you know, we're aiming here for year 2016. But, you know, it's a coin flip for me between England and Uruguay to get out of this group. They haven't got out of this group. I'm actually not that upset about it. I kind of expected it.
Yeah, I mean, you and I are the same, where every major tournament comes, and as much as England aren't playing great leading in, or they don't have the horses, I still convince myself that they can make a deep run.
There's hope.
These guys put on an England shirt, and I don't know what happens. And to blame media pressure and stuff, I think, is an easy fallout. Oh, there's pressure on every team. Let's not give these guys a pass by saying, oh, the English media and this and that. You think there's not more pressure on Brazil?
Yeah.
They look just fine.
Even Argentina?
Pressure on Argentina.
Yeah.
Chile?
Just fine.
Come on, do me a favor. England, these players put on the shirt, and they absolutely forget about how to play simple things. And The pressure somehow gets to them. Joe Hart looks lost out there. Leighton Baines was absolutely useless. I would have taken Ashley Cole out there any day.
I still think they should have taken Cole, I think.
Yeah. Come on, these guys were useless.
They were. Yeah, the future's, I think, bright in the attacking half of the field. Yeah. In the other half of the field, I have some grave concerns because Phil Jagielka isn't old. He's in his prime, and he's a good club footballer, but he's not at this level. I'm still not quite sure about Gary Cahill in England's shirt, but he's okay. And left back, like you said, Leighton Baines was dreadful. Luke Shaw's a kid. Anyway.
Younger than Sterling. Yeah. I cannot believe that.
And on the verge of joining Manchester United for £34 million after one great season at Southampton.
Sometimes
good
that's all it takes.
Football, eh? Good old football makes so much sense. In Group E, France. Okay, France, we talk about teams who have impressed so far. France have been the team that stands out above all others to me as being the best of the tournament thus far.
Je suis sold. I'm all over the French.
Is sold actually the right word?
It's hard for me to admit that I actually enjoy watching France play, but heading into this tournament, I mean, they were the cream of the crop in that group, performed just as expected. I think they look great on paper, and what I really like about them is it seems like there's a chemistry, this bizarre adhesiveness that we never see with the French, or cohesion is a better word than that, and they're deep. They're so deep. You look at Loic Remy can come off as your third option. That's a pretty darn good third option. I really rate France right now.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about the depth and defensively they've looked good. I want to see them with a test. Switzerland, I actually like Switzerland, so the fact that France put five past them and it was 5-0 at one point was very impressive. You know, France have Nigeria next. I think they'll get through that. Then it would be Germany in the quarters. I mean,
That'll be the test.
That setting up is possibly the best quarterfinal for me if all of things fall into place with the teams you expect to win.
In this World Cup?
Amazing. I think it would be, you know, France, Germany attacking, and they're impressive. I mean, I think Deschamps done a great job. The unity is a huge thing. The Dutch, the same thing, right? These teams have the talent, and they have the players to be there, but it's all about clicking at the right time, the players playing well. You know, Ribery not being there, France have looked so good, is incredible. Nazri, everyone was up in arms. They're not anymore. I mean, they have the horses, they have the right system, they know what to do with it, and, you know, peaking at the right time is so important. This tournament happens every 4 years. A major tournament happens every 2 years. There's a lot to be said for peaking at the right time, and France are doing that right now.
And Deschamps knows all about it, right, having won with France. And hey, he's done a masterful job so far. You lose Ribery, you know, you bring in Griezmann, look really good. Then, you know, on Griezmann, you put Giroud. You know, he's moved things around. He's had a chance to rest players
options
in that last round of games. I think Pogba's shown flashes. He's shown his naivety as well at times. But he's a lovely little weapon to have, isn't he? He really is. I think Yann Gabay's been brilliant so far this season. This is World Cup. Really good. Has anyone been better than Leo Messi? Talk about a guy under pressure. It's funny, you watch the game and you remove the goal, you think, well, it's not quite Messi, he's not quite dominating the way he usually does, but then you realize he's got four goals suddenly. And when he's had to, he's stood up and he's smiling out there.
Yeah.
I mentioned it on the show yesterday a lot. When he scored that free kick, the minute it left his foot, he was smiling. Mm-hmm. When was the last time you saw Leo Messi smile in a soccer match? It's been a year or so.
Yeah, I would say a couple years maybe, since Barca were at their peak, and as was he. He's got great pieces around him, and he's playing the game that he was expected to in an Argentina shirt, which we haven't really seen much. And you're right, you know, the goal against Iran, everyone raved about, like, oh, it's Messi. Yeah, it was a decent goal, I thought. Same with the first goal. I'm like, yeah, it's Messi again. It's Messi.
So yeah, his bar is so high.
His bar is so high.
If that was, I'm going to say Theo Walcott scoring that goal. Like, oh my God, did you see that?
Yeah. There's got to be a bunch of schleppies that have scored World Cup goals. You're like, that guy scored a goal in a World Cup? My goodness. But no, I mean, Messi is exactly what Argentina need him to be. And I truly believe the universe wants Messi to win a World Cup.
It's so funny how times change, right? Because there was a time when I just despised Argentina because of, you know, what happened in 86. But, you know, I guess time cures all, right?
And they were your Greece. So eventually I like Greece. Is that what you're saying?
Eventually you will, yeah.
No, I don't
yeah.
think so.
I would love to see Leo Messi win the World Cup. Really would.
Yeah. It's easy to cheer for him with what we saw this week with Suarez, right? It's Leo Messi is the anti-Luis Suarez.
Absolutely.
He's a guy that the public can easily cheer for. You know, his story is amazing. And the fact that he was being questioned going into this, you know, can he be put with the all-time greats if he doesn't win a World Cup or he hasn't delivered for Argentina? I mean, nonsense. And to go from, you know, not having a World Cup goal to having four in, you know, the span of three games and carrying this team on his shoulders. The thing I will say about Argentina is look out if the rest of the team starts playing. I know Aguero's out, but we haven't seen the best of this team, and he's had to carry them a little bit.
He has, yeah.
Yep.
And the defense is a little fragile, but if this team starts clicking, and again, you know, the road is pretty nice for them to get there with Switzerland and then the winner of Belgium, USA. You know, this team is going to hum along, and it's comfortable for them, and I think that they're going to be where everyone expects them to be at the end, and that's in the final.
Their best is yet to come.
What about Group G and Germany? Is their best yet to come? For me, they played one good game, and boy, it was a great game.
Yeah.
Against Portugal, and as bad as Portugal were, Germany were fantastic in that match. And then, you know, they, against Ghana, it was a crazy match. It was a wonderful match. Maybe the best match, actually, of the tournament is up there. There's been some great games so far, but, you know, they dropped points. And then, of course, against the States, and today, I mean, hey, bit of a strange game. Awful conditions, but they got the job done in the end. There's a lot more left in the tank, isn't there? And if one team knows how to manage tournaments, it's that team. And I do think that team is going to hit their stride at just the right time.
I agree. I think they're the best team on paper. I think that, you know, if you could take a squad in any circumstance to say that they're the best team to win the World Cup, I think that Germany is that. Of course, there's the factors of it being in South America. Argentina and Brazil have that behind them. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of things, and Germany have a tough road. They're gonna have to beat three amazing teams to get there in all likelihood for them to win the World Cup. Once they get past Algeria, which obviously is pretty much a certainty, it will likely be France, and then it could be Brazil, and then, you know, whoever comes out of the other side, whether it be Argentina or Netherlands, they're gonna have to prove it, and that's where they've fallen short. I mean, I think semifinals is, you know, the absolute minimum of expectation. They're going to have to prove it, because this window of this team being this good, they've fallen short at that hurdle, at the semifinal hurdle,
and they have
a couple times lately.
Big pressure, yeah. But it's funny, because it's a very, very valid point in that, and people are saying this must be the year they win because they've come so close but haven't quite done it. Well, look at this team. It's still very young. Outside of Schweinsteiger, who now has been kind of replaced by Sami Khedira in that midfield, it's really quite young. Thomas Müller's in his prime, and the one slight against this team was, well, you know, yeah, it's a great team, but it lacks that true game-breaker like a Leo Messi or a Cristiano Ronaldo, that truly, truly all-world player. Well, in big tournaments, Thomas Müller's an all-world player. Yeah. I don't care about the other, you know, 85 games of the season, 70 games of the season. In the big tournaments, in the big games, be it Champions League, or be it in World Cups, European Championships, that there are a few guys that I would want on my team more than him.
You're absolutely right. To me, I have just a bit of doubt with Müller, because it seems as though, you know, he's so brilliant one game and can't replicate it the next. And you think back to that semifinal loss at Euro 2012. Where was that steal then? I thought that was it. Semifinals 4 years ago as well. There's just something about him to me that I just doubt that he can keep up that level.
He looks
level.
Too unkempt for you, too untidy, because he's got the socks down by the ankles. You like a nice, you know, knees up, socks by his knees, nice tight shirt.
You're right. He's 20. He's 24. He looks like he's been in the. He looks like he's been in the sun for 24
he's
years.
He's in the Diego Costa 24 years of age.
Oh, it's
school, right? Like, is he really?
Yeah, he's like 42.
The cliche is, oh, German mental strength and mental fortitude. For me, I think that Germany can blow your socks off and be incredibly impressive.
Did it for Müller.
When they're up. But when I want to see this team, it's going to be a big question if they go down a goal to possibly, you know, France in the quarters or in a game, because I don't think they're really a team that's built for coming from behind. You know, they're a team that will be great. You saw it against Portugal. They go up early. Look out. I mean, they can blow a team away. But there's going to be adversity at some point in this tournament. There's going to be a point where Germany are going to have to really lock in and really play their best and not let it slip away. And if they can get over that hump in a quarterfinal or a semifinal, they could go there. I mean, I picked them to win this tournament. I'm not 100% sold on them. I don't think that they've shown everything, but I think sometimes that's good, because it's a marathon, not a sprint. Let's not forget that. You have to be peaking as you get forward into that. And I think getting Algeria in the next round is
helps.
A blessing in a way, because they can really get their confidence up and go out and you know, get an early goal and play with that flair, and then from there, look out.
I really hope CR7 will not get hammered back home for his performance. For a man that was clearly not 100%, I thought he played very well, and he was by far his team's best player. But, you know, his confidence wasn't quite there. I found himself Usually he's a bit of a ball hog, isn't he? And he didn't see that at this World Cup. Had some great moments. Today, he could have scored 3 or 4 goals. You know, on a different day, he may have scored 3 or 4 goals, quite frankly. Didn't happen for him, though. Portugal bow out. Are you okay, B? I mean, are they being smashed at home now?
I'm gutted, man. It was rough. I got to be honest. I've kind of... I'll do the perusing of Ebola and the other websites in the morning to see what the reaction is. But it shouldn't be Ronaldo bashing by any means. I mean, it was not 100%. You could tell that in the game against the States. The jungle got to him as well. There was no... Nobody could have expected him to have carried the team through the adversity after going down in that first game. Against Ghana, he played as close to himself, I think, as we've seen, maybe since the semifinal, the Champions League semifinal. And it just wasn't enough. Ran into a great keeper. Doesn't have supportive pieces around him. Dobby mentioned earlier how Argentina haven't really stepped up, but I think that the pieces supporting Messi have been much better, where Ronaldo has to do it all. He was the hardest working player on the pitch by light years, and there's nobody even in his class.
He'll be 30 next birthday. This
crazy.
Might be his last World Cup. Probably make one more, but you hope that a William Carvalho, for example, will now be cemented into that lineup and may be that person who can help Ronaldo out. Because from what I saw from this kid, I mean, they used him quite conservatively. He kept it really simple.
That's because Bento's
really
afraid
simple.
Of change.
But boy, yeah, well, maybe. But, I mean, he's a young kid, right? Getting
to me,
his first World Cup experience.
Me,
I thought from what he showed, he may have been, should have been used more, perhaps, but he was very good.
That's why he'll be a £30 million buy for United or some other team.
Yeah.
That's after one great season at Sporting Lisbon. But to me, the scapegoat has to be Bento. Not recognizing that Veloso was your best option at left back to start against the States, you wasted a substitution. Not recognizing that Helder Prestiga wasn't going to last 30 minutes in the jungle, stupid. Waste of a substitution. You had to put Adair on, who was quite awful,
horrendous.
But sadly, their best option. The best striking option.
Use the same joke again.
Yeah.
Because it's pretty good, right?
Yeah.
It's like a really bad man, poor man's Nwankwo Kanu. It's all knees and legs and elbows.
It was a very good joke.
It was a very good joke.
First
time, right? Much better response, listeners. The first time I said it, these guys laughed hard, but obviously the second time it's not quite as funny.
And Lucas Pancari's loving it. He'll get a lot of retweets.
Lucas!
Don't worry.
Portugal's first game really ended their tournament.
Sealed it.
I mean, that sealed it. The way that it happened, that in a group like that, it smashed their goal difference. Pepe suspended, Contrao out hurt. I mean, they weren't recovering from that. And even the late goal, some character to draw the U.S., they had to beat them. Because at that point, it was, they needed a miracle today. They needed to smash Ghana, who had the goals in them throughout the tournament.
I thought they'd get it. I really did. Yeah, I thought that, fandom. What we've seen at this World Cup, there's nobody in Germany's back room that likes Jurgen Klinsmann. They weren't going to do him a solid. They're capable of going out and smashing them. But the U.S. played well and it prevented that. And I think in the end, it was always going to go this way. But I had a bit of hope with Ghana, with their mess, and with Prince and Mentari not being around, and the cavalcade of money.
I think the only issue there. I mean, I thought it was possible that Germany could take 2 or 3 past the States and vice versa. Portugal
would need 2, yeah.
But States having that big horseshoe at the backside really helps. Unfair, I know. Listen, the States are a wonderful story. Very few people picked them to get out of the group. I didn't, that's for sure. Good for them. I thought they were very fortunate against Ghana. They played a great, exciting game against Portugal. Should have won that game, perhaps.
Sure.
And then, of course, on today, when in the end it didn't matter, of course, but playing a very good Germany team. But all you can say is that USA were put into the group of death, right? And they're written off, and they got out of the group of death.
Yep.
And there's no controversy over it.
No, it's a bonus.
They found a way.
Belgium a real game.
I do as well.
Haven't done that much for me in a weak group, and a lot of characters score late, and yeah, they're humming along as well. But I don't know. I feel like Belgium could possibly have this flame out where everyone's picking them to go deep. I think the U.S. gives them a real scare if not beat them.
I expect Belgium. They've played some great second half so far. They've taken the first halves off every game. I hope they start Origi, because the minute he comes in the field, they become a much, much better, more potent attack inside. I think they're going to find their form in time for the last 16, smash the States, and then they're going to find Argentina waiting for them, and that'll be the end of this lovely run.
Good
for them.
You should want the States to be more successful. As someone who works in the media...
Did I say I didn't want them to?
No, but the better the States do, the better it is for them.
No, I didn't say I didn't want the States to.
No, I know.
I said they'd be smashed by Belgium, which I think they will be. But I didn't say that I wanted that to happen.
Okay, I guess you're right. I misheard you.
I'm with you. I listen, the better the States do. It's great for soccer people working in the soccer field in North America.
Yeah. I think it extends beyond just the media, but that's really all that matters, though, right? That's all that matters to us, yeah.
To help everyone else outside the media.
You're right. I don't care about kids getting scholarships at NCAA and better programs down south. You're right. No, yeah. I just want this to be better on TV.
All right, boys. Well, second time around, it was all right, wasn't it? I think it's actually a little neater and tidier than the first time around.
Well,
less inappropriate comments, that's for sure.
Hey, when you find out it hasn't saved and we want to do a 20-minute version, then that'll be the scenario we've put ourselves in.
Let's do it again before the final, maybe. And we'll see what happens. And
anytime.
If anything has overshadowed Luis Suarez by then. Hopefully some great games. I suspect they'll be a bit tighter than we've seen so far. But, boy, it's been a lot of fun so far. Thomas Dobby, Brendan Dunlop, thank you so much, boys. Reunited at last.
Love it.
Reunited. All right, cheers for listening.